Welcome back to the clubhouse. Here in the McAdoo studios, Kyle Bailey, still joined by Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Coleman TSL. And a hearty hello, and we miss you, to Will Stewart of TechSideline, who...
He's still alive, we promise.
Yeah, he's still alive. He'll be back at some point. But he's, as Chris said earlier, one of the true family men still out there, attending to family stuff and being a good father. So that takes precedence over sports talk radio. We were talking basketball there a second ago. Malik Mueller transferring out of the program, the eighth player to leave since Buzz Williams took the job in Blacksburg. I think too much has been made of that by some people. We went over that ground. But you mentioned Malcolm Delaney, you know, late in that last segment. I just thought it was worth mentioning. The guy's, I can't remember the actual publication's name. Is it Basketball in Europe, I guess what it is?
I think so.
It's a media company over in Europe that covers all the European basketball, had reached out to me to help them with a profile piece on Malcolm Delaney. And, you know, I was a student when Malcolm Delaney was playing at Virginia Tech. You were actually covering Malcolm Delaney when he was there. So I told the guys at that particular organization that I was deferring to Chris on that.
Uh-huh.
But it was a really good piece. It was a long piece, and people should know just what a great deal of success Malcolm Delaney has found overseas playing basketball. And it sounds to me, at least from the people that I've talked to, that Malcolm has had some opportunities to come back stateside, you know, on some NBA contract possibilities, but he's just content playing in Europe, and he's going to wait for the right opportunity if he comes back to the NBA at all.
Well, he's making six figures over there,
right?
Obviously.
Traveling the world.
Right. And obviously, if you don't get a guaranteed contract by the NBA, then you don't come back.
Sure.
If the timing's not right. I think that's the only way you make that move, and generally NBA teams aren't going to give guaranteed money to a guy they sign out of a European league like that. So I definitely think he could play in the NBA. There are teams out there. He could be on a lot of rosters out there. I think he's a better player than Eric Green. I really like Eric, but I think Malcolm Delaney has more natural talent than Eric Green.
Offensively, at least,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, and Eric's in the NBA. But that being said, man, you might have a tough time pulling me out of Europe. With he's probably getting his housing paid for.
Sure.
Expenses paid for.
Car.
All of that. You're living in you'll never get another chance to spend your 20s in Europe.
Traveling the world.
Yes.
Getting paid six figures.
Yeah.
Playing basketball and winning championships. What has he won? Three European League titles now?
I think so.
In different leagues with different teams.
Yeah.
You know, and the last two stops, I think not much was expected of him, at least in terms of being a star player. But he turned out to be, you know, one of, if not the best player on both of those teams.
Sure. I mean, and if you can, it comes down to it, I would rather play in Europe than be a deep bench guy in the NBA that gets in 20 games a year.
Yeah. At Bayern Munich, which most people know is, you know, one of the elite soccer clubs in the country, also runs a basketball club. And I think it's still... Maybe not up-and-coming league is the right way to put it, because they're fairly well-established at that point, but not one of the elite European leagues, but still very good. Mm-hmm. I think Malcolm was there for a season and led them to a championship before leaving for Russia,
if I'm not mistaken.
So he's had a tremendous career over there, and you wish him the best. I mean, you said it. He's got just immense talent, immense talent over there. All right, let's change gears. I want to talk some football with you. I tweeted this article this morning, and I know you read it because we talked about it. Bill Connolly over at SB Nation, who runs, what is it, Football Study Hall, and he's just a great, great college football guy. I mean, he just does it all, and he's very analytics-driven, and I know that you use a lot of his stuff. We've talked about this before because I think it was you several months back that talked about Virginia Tech's finish in total defense, you know, one of the more traditional college football or football stats in general, but that the guys over at Football Study Hall and SB Nation, Bill Connolly in particular, they do an index rating system that's a little bit different. It's more empirically driven. Mm-hmm. And I think he had Tech as the number three defense in the country last year in one of his measures, one of his indexes, because basically his premise was no one drove the entire length of the field on Virginia Tech ever. If you scored against the Hokies, it was because you had great field position. But anyway, it was a great look at, you know, Virginia Tech's last couple of years and prior to that where his standings had Tech ranked at the end of the season. He said for, I think, a solid 5 or 6 years, you know, Tech didn't finish any lower than 4th to 17th nationally, you know, in his rating system. And in the last three seasons, you know, never finished lower than 41st, which still isn't bad, but it's an obvious dip from where Virginia Tech was. And the thesis here was simply that can Virginia Tech's offense be competent enough this season to lend a hand to a defense that should be, if healthy, spectacular? I thought it was a great piece.
Yeah, I thought it was too. And it's really hard for somebody – with a national focus to know that much detail
exactly
on one team, and that was why I was really impressed with it. I think he hit the nail on the head for the most part. If this offense is average this year, we're going to win a lot of football games.
No doubt.
If this offense was average last year, the year before, we would have won a lot of football games.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need greatness from our offense here. It would be awesome, but we don't need it. Just protect the football and be efficient. And that's something they've struggled to do in recent seasons. But, you know, they had so many injuries last year and so many freshmen playing. They can't help but be better this year. I don't think it's possible for them to be anything but better.
No, I agree with you 100%. One of the interesting things that I took from this piece, and it wasn't surprising, I think we all knew this, but it's not something that we considered maybe a lot of, is that from 1995 to 2010, of the 55 players that Virginia Tech had drafted in that span, 29 were defenders, but 26 were offensive players. Frank Beamer's best teams have always been anchored by defense and special teams, but they were always at least pretty good offensively and oftentimes very good.
Their best offensive teams always had star power,
mm-hmm.
and we have had zero star power. I think I wrote an article last week. I think it was part of my Friday Q&A where we've only had one all-ACC offensive player in the last 3 years, and that was Bucky Hodges last year, who was third team. I mean, that just shows a complete lack of talent on the offensive side of the ball. But if you look throughout Virginia Tech's history in the NFL, I know we're called DBU, but look at some of the receivers we put in the NFL. Josh Morgan was a longtime starter. Eddie Royal still in the NFL. Antonio Freeman. Ernest Wilford played for a while in the NFL. Clowney was in the NFL. Justin Harper was in the NFL. Brian Still was in the NFL. Virginia Tech has put a ton of wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, and not one of them had a 1,000-yard receiving season. How crazy is that?
It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable.
Because it's not yet been done at the program.
Hasn't yet been done. Andre Davis got – if Andre Davis, he played in 99, that 99 season, they didn't count bowl stats
right.
for regular stats.
He was close.
Then. He was close. He had over 100 yards receiving in the bowl game, but I think he had over 900 yards receiving in the regular season.
He did.
Right. So if by modern-day statistical methods – he has over 1,000 yards in 12 games in 1999, but they just didn't count for the bowl game for the total stats back then. I think they should actually go back and retrofit those old statistical models based on the modern rules.
That's a job for somebody.
It's a job for somebody, but with computers these days, you
let's
could
create
be able
some
to
jobs.
It.
Let's boost the economy.
There
right?
you go. Right.
Let's do that.
we're doing the right here from a studio.
I know. Jared Boykin was close, right?
Yeah,
I think Jared Boykin was
pretty close.
He was
too.
Pretty close.
But he did his own number of catches. You know, I think he caught 55 or 60 passes that year as a senior, whereas I think Andre Davis only caught like 35 passes that year. He just gained like 30 or 40 yards every time he touched the football.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely incredible. Still this day, I know Tech fans might disagree with this, the fastest player I've ever seen in a Virginia Tech uniform.
Andre Davis.
On straight ahead speed.
Oh, I agree.
Straight ahead speed, the fastest player I've ever seen.
D'Angelo Hall was close.
Yes.
D'Angelo Hall was very close. Yep. I know you remember this. You have to remember this, but that the I guess it was that old urban myth about D'Angelo running a 4.140
yeah.
at a camp. All right, you know, remember that?
Yeah.
And I think there was if I'm not mistaken, there were some sports scientists, some physicists who actually debunked that. Not specifically D'Angelo, but a couple of years ago, I remember reading that a sports scientist said it is not physically possible for a human being to run a 4.140.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that seems fairly conclusive, maybe overly conclusive to me, because with modern medicine and training, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if somebody did it or if someone yeah. could do it. But, I mean, I remember reading that a 4.140 was not physically attainable by a human being. So I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if that's that. Who knows? Who knows what's
right.
physically attainable mm-hmm. by a human being?
Especially with steroids.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, right. And I remember, I think I've read somewhere that that humans aren't capable of hitting like 107-mile-an-hour fastball or
right.
something.
Right, right.
And they say based on the point the ball's released and you don't know what's coming and
sure.
things like that. There's so many factors involved.
Raldis Chapman has pushed the limits there.
Pushed the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. All I know is he was fast.
Well, you said the words star power a second ago, and that was one of the topics of conversation that Bud Foster and I discussed yesterday, was that it just feels like for the first time since probably 2010, this team has star power. You know, clearly it has it on the defense with Kendall Fuller and Daddy Nicholas and, Corey Marshall and so on and so forth. Even Ken Akanum, who has, you know, had a better statistical season last year.
Sacks. More sacks than Daddy Nicholas. I don't think most Tech fans would realize that.
Yeah.
I might do a trivia question or something over the summer, win a free TSL subscription. Tell me who led Virginia Tech in sacks last year. And I bet the first six callers would be like, Daddy Nicholas.
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, and it's not just the star power on the defense, but there's potential for star power on the offensive side. I think Isaiah Ford is maybe due for a breakout year. Just having, you know, certainly seen what he could do catching the football last year, but just having talked to him in the spring and seeing that he's put on 10 to 12 pounds of muscle and watching him outrun that Tech secondary on a long, you know, screen passing for 60 yards for a touchdown in one of those scrimmages, I think he's got the potential for a breakout year. Honestly, of all the running backs that are back there, I've still got it in the back of my mind that Trey Edmonds could have a huge year. Mm-hmm. I think Trey Edmonds could have a big year. And I still think, from a physical standpoint, he might be the most talented runner in that backfield right now.
I think it's either him or I think Shy McKenzie. I think from a physical perspective, like, Trey is faster. I think Shy has a little bit more of a natural running style.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I think they're both of them ceiling is really high. The issue with Shy is how healthy is that knee going to be?
Trey's so hard to tackle.
Yeah, he really is. And, you know, he's fast, too. I don't think he's quite got all his speed back, but if he gets that speed back, the speed that outran Alabama's secondary mm-hmm. that time, you know, he can certainly be a force. And I thought he had a good spring, and I saw him at a football camp this past weekend, and, you know, he's up to 225 pounds thereabouts.
And he's a monster.
Yeah, he very much looks
And he's
apart.
Such an easy kid to root for.
Yeah, you know, he's a nice guy, man.
We talk about this sometimes. You know, you and I are in the media, and because of our role with these things, I mean, we're around these guys, and because it's such a small community, you know, we'll run into coaches and players and guys like that in Kroger or downtown on the sidewalk. And I oftentimes try to avoid the conversations because it's a weird relationship. Not that it's contentious, but, you know, some guys have a natural fear of the media or they don't want to talk to the media. And I get that. I mean, it's a boundary to be respected. But, you know, I say sometimes to people that I talk to that whenever I happen to see Trey Edmonds in a restaurant or a grocery store, he's such an affable, friendly kid.
He is.
He'll walk up and, you know, you just shake your hand and say what's up, ask you how you're doing, how the family's doing. It's so easy to root for a kid like that who comes from a good family. There are three Edmonds on the roster now. His dad's a great guy and a great football coach. It's one of those things where, from a personal standpoint, you want to root for the kid to do well.
Oh, from a personal standpoint, his dad, who's the head coach at Dan River, this was before his dad started coaching at Dan River, but his dad brought a bunch of NFL players and did a one-day camp at my high school in the summer of 1999 when I played high school football at Chatham.
Right.
And then after the camp, Farrell took everybody back to his house to have a cookout. And I remember little Trey being there, you know, 3 years old or whatever. And, So I can't say I've known Trey since he was a little kid like that. But I've been around Trey at that point. I've been around his dad. And it's a really good family. And he's a guy that's easy to pull for to have a lot of success.
I hear you. Let's take a break. One more segment with Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com here in the McAdoo studios. Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.